This is the RDU on Stage podcast. I'm Lauren Van Hamert, your host, and today we're talking about the life and times of Ethel Waters. Ethel Waters was a pioneer who broke down barriers on Broadway, in films, and on television. And if you think you don't know who she is, I bet that you do. She was the first to sing the song Stormy Weather at the famed Cotton Club in 1933, and her recording of that song was inducted into the Grammy Hall of Fame nearly 70 years later. In fact, in 2004, the Library of Congress added that recording to the National Recording Registry. But behind Waters' soft smile was pain. Here is Phyllis Morrison and Kenneth Hinton to introduce us to the woman behind the music. Morrison is taking on the role of Ethel Waters in Agape Theater Project's production of Sweet Mama String Bean, The Life and Times of Ethel Waters, which Hinton directs.
Ethel was a regular girl who wanted simply to be loved by her family, loved and accepted, which I think is a lot of people's story. And I think a lot of her decisions in life, a lot of what she did, came out of the things that she longed for that she'd never gotten from home. You know how that works. You know, when you don't get it from home, you get it from someplace else, or you try to get it from someplace else. But she recognized early on her love of music, and that love of music is what helped to sustain her and hold her and keep her and help her to not give up.
Well, and from what I read, she didn't have an easy path. Behind that smile, behind those eyes, there was a lot of trauma and pain. How do you both think that affected her music? How do you think that affected the artist she became?
Well, you know, her first love was blues. And when if you know anything about blues, you know the blues comes from deep down hurts, deep down pains and longings and wants. And so you are drawn to that thing that feeds into what that speaks to, you know, who you are. So her first love and her last love, you know, was always blues. Yeah.
But she kind of became a pop singer because Bessie Smith didn't want her singing the blues.
Right.
So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Val Jean Lamar Jansen wrote this script in 1993 in graduate school. We were in graduate school together, and she wrote this script. She did a lot of research on it. Ethel Waters' story is from when she was 13 years old, and she started to sing, and not even out of grade school. And the pain, she always talks about the pain that she has, and there's a song that goes with that pain. And she says, whites don't have the blues. We have the blues. So, and that's one of the things that she said throughout her career. But she went from singing in joints, juke joints, until Broadway. So she went through a lot in her career. And she talks about the racism part of it, too. So this play covers her whole career as she got older, every song that was written during that period. And I think when you get through seeing this show and this fabulous voice that I have to portray Miss Waters, that you will understand the pain that Ethel went through.
And you were, you know, to add to that, so when you're talking about the fact that she, blues was her beginning, but she did segue into different genres of music. Well, it's no different, I think, than artists of today. You have to stay relevant. So that's what she did. She stayed relevant in her own way. So Bessie Smith, for sure, didn't want her singing no blues. What did she say? I don't want nobody else on this bill singing the blues. But the difference was Ethel had a different style of singing the blues. And I think that's one thing that helped her to be so well-received with colored audiences as well as white. Everybody was so used to that hard, down-home kind of blues singing, But with Ethel, her voice was a little softer. Her voice wasn't so hard and wasn't so in your face. It was just different. And sometimes different makes the difference. And I think for her, it certainly did.
Well, and talk about keeping up being relevant. I mean, she tackled Broadway. She tackled records, mm-hmm, of course, mm-hmm, Columbia Records, mm-hmm, television. It wasn't just that she was a singer or right, a blues singer. She really...
She was an artist.
And a pioneer. Yeah. First artist to integrate Broadway.
Yes.
Right. Yes.
Yes.
I mean, we take that for granted now, yes, but she was the first.
Yep. First artist, first woman artist, first colored, you know, to branch out from the stereotypical characters that African Americans were given to play at that time. So.
And she toured the world, too. Yeah, she took her music overseas and was very well received.
But we're talking about the 1930s.
Right.
Era of Jim Crow.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck when I saw Lady Day at Emerson's Bar and Grill, mm-hmm, that one of the stories Billie Holiday shares in that show is that even though she was playing in nightclubs, she had to eat in the kitchen.
Right.
And so many black performers at that time still faced racism.
Right.
Racism. And I think as whites, we kind of gloss over that because we think they were somehow immune.
Right.
In your research, did you find stories, I'm sure you did, mm-hmm, where she faced that?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, the thing about it is she actually said in an interview that your talent, it didn't matter who was listening to you, white people, black people, your talent basically made room for you to go to the various stages. But at the same time, even though your talent could get you on the stage, it couldn't change what was happening behind the scenes, okay? She talks about the travel, you know, from Jim Crow towns one to the other. She talks about how they had to travel, you know, the railway cars, not in the nice seats, but the crowded, you all up on, you know, everybody else. You're having to pack your own food because you couldn't, you know, eat the food that was being served in the dinings.
The dining car.
Traveling on old rickety buses, you know, that may fail at any moment, horse carts, you know, that kind of thing, particularly down south. I think she felt freer and less afraid of the racism up north. But when she came down south, that's when it really hit her. Just being terrified all the time of the possibility of being dragged off of stage.
Yeah, because some places didn't allow black performers to be on stage, and some did. But one of the most important things she learned was the business of being an artist. She found that she was being cheated out of money. She would be bringing these huge crowds in, and when she got ready to get paid, she didn't feel like she was getting paid the right amount because the owners and the booking agents, mm-hmm, were taking the money. Mm-hmm. So she quickly became very astute at that, fired these managers and got people that was more on her side so she could keep a little bit more of the money. So.
And then that only goes so far, though, because, again, most of the theaters were managed by white theater owners.
Right.
And so when you're at their mercy, there's really only so much you can do. Or you can say, without getting yourself blackballed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because she actually says she really had no desire to perform for white audiences. She had no desire at all. She was actually pushed and prodded by a friend of hers to go because he knew that it would open up some bigger doors for her. But she, you know, she was like, I am so not interested in that. I'm good right where I am. But, you know, she finally conceded and the rest is history.
Yeah, because in one part of the script when she talks about she would rather work for a white rich person as a maid and travel the world. But then she laughed at it because she's like, now look at me now. I mean, I'm traveling the world and I don't have to. I have a white maid. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, Phyllis, I saw on Facebook there was some concern about some of the choice words that Ethel Waters says that were written in the script. Mm. Did she have a choice vocabulary?
She, not as much as some. So that particular reference was actually in the script. Ethel was talking about Bessie Smith, actually, and she was mimicking something that Bessie Smith had to say. Before, right before she died, she was very clear about her her faith in God and that transition that had occurred in her life. So I think over the years, that mouth that she did have was tamed.
Yeah, but you know, raised in poverty over in the hood, you know, there's a certain part of her that was going to be earthy anyway, right? I mean, she was not raised on the rich side of town. So when she expressed herself, she went on down home and expressed herself, right? So yeah, but most of our script is pretty clean, tame.
I know she found her faith, as you said, mm-hmm. towards the end of her life. And I know you are a woman of faith.
Yes.
Is that the thread that kind of ties you to Ethel, or are there other similarities in the story?
Yeah. Wow. I got goosebumps with that question. So, yeah. So speaking of Ethel's faith, she was very clear that she actually, her faith began early. She was like maybe 12 years old when she actually accepted the Lord as her Savior. But through life, she kind of allowed things
to, as a lot of us do.
Exactly, to pull her away from that. But she never forgot where she came from. So yeah, faith pulls us together. But the thing that really connects me with her is family. So our lives, although started differently, they sort of still started the same. Her mother was raped at age 12. And Ethel grew up being raised by her grandmother, being raised by aunts, you know. But she always wanted but never really felt a connection to her mother, her biological mother. And I can understand that. Her mother was raped. She was 12. She didn't really know how to process all of what had happened to her. But that still left Ethel deficient in wanting that love from her mother. And even just from her family in general, just the bigger picture of it. I'm adopted. I was adopted at age 5. And my adoptive family situation was not great. And I always longed for the love from my adoptive mother, not from my but from my adoptive mother. So I get it. And at the end of the play, that's where I really have to try to hold it together, because she finally gets to see and to feel that thing that she has been wanting from her mother all her life.
Yeah.
And I get it.
In doing your research, both of you, and you've been with this play a long time. You knew the playwright in graduate school. Was there anything that surprised you about her story?
I think that her resilience and how she get knocked down and she come back up higher, get knocked down, just kept coming back higher. Because when she talks about these agents finding her and wanting her to do that role in her first movie, that... You know, she really didn't know what all how big it was, and it became such a great success, and she was so humble at that wow, everybody sees her talent, that everybody saw how big her talent was itself for her. She didn't really understand that everybody knew how big her talent was. She could sing, she could act, she could dance, she could do the whole thing.
True triple threat.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say yes and no to the surprise thing, simply because I think that as a woman of color here in these United States, not much surprises me. And when I look at Ethel's story, I see a woman who did what she had to do in order to survive. That doesn't surprise me. But I guess what does surprise me, and piggybacking off of what you said, Ken, is her humility. Because people can grow and gain and grow and gain, and it goes to their heads.
Right.
I've seen nothing in my research of Ethel, in my watching her interviews, in my reading. I've seen nothing that indicates to me that she lost a sense of who she was. When I just watch her, she just seems like somebody that I would have wanted to know.
Were you a fan of her music before this role?
Nope, I was not. I knew who she was, you know, because music has always been a part of my life, so I knew who she was. But I just never really took the time to focus in on who she was, you know, like some other performers. But now that I have, I was so, I've told Kenneth 100 times how grateful I am for this opportunity, because it has opened up a whole new world for me, you know.
You know, I teach African American theater at NCCU, and also at Shaw, I taught African American theater. And one of the videos I show my class is Cabin in the Sky. And Cabin in the Sky was a huge success in 1947. And she was Petunia, and this was a musical. So she not only acted, she sung she sung all the tracks. For instance, some of the other actors were dubbed. You know, their voices were dubbed, but not hers, because her voice is so clear and so sharp.
Do you have a favorite Ethel Waters song? And sometimes it's different. Sometimes you have a favorite song to sing. Sometimes you have a favorite song to listen to.
Yes. So, okay. The one song that really pushed her into her life as a professional singer was the St. Louis Blues. And it really has a nice, easy, bluesy kind of sound to it. And I love singing it. It's like, oh, I feel like I need to go and put on, you know, an outfit from back in the day, and with a glass of brown liquor in my hand and a cigarette in the other,
right,
and just let this song go. So I love singing that one by her. And of course, Stormy Weather.
I hate to see the evening sun go down. I hate to see the evening sun go down. 'Cause my man done left me, he done left me in this town. Feeling tomorrow like I feel today. Lord, if I'm feeling tomorrow like I feel today, I'm gonna pack up my grip, make my getaway. That St. Louis woman with her diamond rings, pull that man of mine with her apron string. If it weren't for her powder and her store-bought hair, that man I love would not have gone nowhere. I got the St. Louis blues, just as blue as I can be. My man's got a heart like a rock cast into the sea, or else he wouldn't have gone so far from me.
You gotta hear her sing Supper Time.
Ooh, Supper Time is when she's talking, you were talking about the racism. It's a song that basically pays homage to the families who lost their husbands and fathers to lynching.
Right.
It was written by, I believe, Irving Berlin,
mm-hmm,
for her. And it's a tearjerker. It just pulls your heart, because it's a mother who just found out that her husband was lynched and he's not coming home anymore. And it's supper time.
Right.
And she's got to,
you're right,
fix the table. She's got to prepare food for her children. And how is she going to tell them that their daddy, that her husband, isn't coming home anymore?
Supper time.
must set the table, 'cause it's supper time. Somehow I ain't able, 'cause that man of mine ain't coming home no more. Supper time. Kids will soon be yelling for their supper time. How will I keep from telling them that man of mine ain't coming home no more?
Why is this an important story to tell right now? Why are you including it in your season? Why did you want to produce it?
I thought of putting this in a season last year. And one of the reasons was because, you know how something sits on the back burner? And then I said, I need a show that is not as complicated as all the other shows. A one-woman show, we have a really good band and a really good voice and tell her story. And it's just props. There's no scene, set pieces and stuff. So, and then I knew so much about Ethel Waters. And with these troubled times that we're going through right now, it's like somebody said, I don't know who said it, was, I thought we fought racism in the 60s. I thought the civil rights was already done, but here we all seem like we're going through it again. And so I felt this was an important piece to bring back up and let people know what Ethel Waters went through is what some of these artists are still going through today.
I'm going to close the show with a live performance Ethel Waters did for the troops on Armed Forces Radio in 1945. But first, I want to remind you that the Agape Theater Project's production of Sweet Mama String Bean, The Life and Times of Ethel Waters, opens September 13th at the Hayti Heritage Center in Durham. More information about the production can be found in the episode notes. If you like what you've heard today, please consider subscribing to the podcast, follow us on social media at RDU On Stage, or visit us online at www.rduonstage.com. Until next time, I'll see you at the theater.
And let the reek confetti fall where it may, because your big fat bundle of MC is mighty proud to introduce one of America's great singing stars. The lady who's lifted the job of knocking out a number for just entertainment to the rim of high art. Here she is, the inimitable Ethel Waters.
Thank you, folks, and Ernie. And I want to tell you I'm thrilled to have this opportunity to add my little greeting to our boys wherever they may be. Thanks a lot for all the letters, fellas. My first answer is beamed at Poland Ray, Blue, Master Sergeant, Sleep Henry, Big Shorty, Whiskey Pipe, and Wingfoot, and all the boys of the 24th Infantry. But I'm sure the boys won't mind if the rest of you sort of listening over their shoulders while I do, taking a chance on love.
Just hearing trumpets blow again, and I wanna blow again, 'cause I'm taking a chance on your love. Here I slide again, about to take that ride again, yet I'm starry-eyed again, 'cause I'm taking a chance on love.